Next up, the third paper on our panel is Pedestrian Crossings, Some Reflections on the Occasion of a Contemporary Judicial Spectacle. And our speaker is Les Moran from Birkbeck.
And thank you to Shirin, who's left. I'm sure it's nothing personal. But I was delighted to accept the opportunity to come and speak to you and to meet you all, partly because of this wonderful interdisciplinary conversation we're going to have, but also to have another opportunity to present, I think, part of a bigger project. And the bigger project is about the judiciary. I've become fascinated by judicial authority and the nature of judicial authority, the possibility of transforming judicial authority as a legitimate authority for a body politic. It's a project that comes out of a debate around judicial diversity. I started off to look at the place of sexual diversity in the judicial diversity agenda, and I was inspired by being told by government officials as well as the judiciary that sexuality had nothing to do with the judiciary. And I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail, but I want to focus on a contemporary judicial spectacle, and I suppose give you some examples of my own art practice, because I want to use some photographs, and I want to answer a question. And the question is, what are the judges of the UK Supreme Court doing on this pedestrian crossing? The crossing from the UK Supreme Court, which is the building in the background, to Westminster Abbey. And they're crossing for a particular purpose. They're going to attend the religious service that occurs annually in Westminster Abbey to launch the legal year. But before I speculate about the nature of this pedestrian crossing, I want to just... Oh, sorry, this is the other aspects of the pedestrian crossing. Moving from top left to bottom right, we have the President of the UK Supreme Court and the Deputy President, other fellow judges. They cross the road on the pedestrian crossing, get onto the pavement, and I love the shot of the woman with the baby buggy being sort of crushed into the Abbey's railings as the judges, apparently with ease, negotiate the sidewalk and turn into the Abbey, and then continue in a more orderly manner to process with the Abbey in the background, to the entrance of the Abbey for the purpose of the service. But as I say, before we, I reflect a little bit more on the nature of that judicial practice, let me just give you a little bit more about the context. When I was told that the judiciary had, or sexuality had no place in relation to the institution of the judiciary and judicial authority more specifically, I began to think about, well, where else might you look to find information about the nature of judicial authority, the nature of judicial institution? If the judges weren't going to tell me in interviews, I should be looking in other places for other objects relating to the judiciary that might give me some insight. And I started to look at judicial portraits. And had to try to sort of understand what these images are, how they might be utilized, how they might be read, so on and so forth. And asked some questions about whether or not sexuality was represented in these images, and turned to queer theory and scholarship around heteronormativity to try to make sense of that. And the insight that comes from that, as far as I was concerned, was that the silence was a manifestation of sexuality. So the fact that it wasn't sort of officially represented did not necessarily mean that it was absent. But to get to that point, I had to try to understand these particular images, and they draw upon a particular aesthetics. They are connected to a very long tradition of state portraiture, and just focusing on the portrait at the top right-hand corner, a 16th century portrait of an English judge. These are basically assemblages of symbols that represent the legitimacy of judicial authority. And the face gives that a particular individual characteristic. But at the same time, these are meant to be state portraits. These are portraits of the institutions. And it's perhaps no surprise that they all look the same when you put them together. And it's very difficult to differentiate one judge from another. That is partly an aesthetics of the virtues of the institution. The virtue of the institution is its durability, its repetition, the fact that it isn't individualized, and the individual is, in a sense, edited out of the picture in order to represent the quality and the nature of the institution. Well, if we go to the bottom of the screen, we have a series of pictures of Lord Justice Etherton, who is a gay man who sits in the Court of Appeal. And I've had a series of conversations with him about the place of sexual orientation in the judicial institution, and discussions with him about how or whether or not sexual orientation, particularly the fact that he's gay, can be represented as a virtue of the institution, because all judicial portraits are about the institution, about the institution's virtues and values. The bottom right-hand side, you see a series of images of dressed in red, he's Justice Etherton. Dressed in black and gold, he's Lord Justice Etherton. They're on Photoshop's website. And these are official images of judges that are produced at the moment the judge is sworn in. And if you get an opportunity to look at the many hundreds, if not thousands, of judicial images on this particular website, they're almost all exactly the same. Each judge has three images produced: full body, three-quarter body, and head of shoulders, dressed in full judicial regalia. What was interesting about Lord Justice Etherton was that on the court website, judges have been invited to provide biographical information and a photograph. This was part of a program to raise the public profile of the judiciary. And Lord Justice Etherton had provided his written note, his biographical background, but there was no image. I asked him why that was, and threw down the gauntlet. Well, how about producing an image that would incorporate your sexual difference as a virtue of the institution? And the image on the left-hand side is the image that he had produced in response to that challenge. It was interesting to show that to a photographer in Canada who produced judicial images, and his first reaction was, why are the curtains in the picture? What's that got to do with the judge? And then my reaction was, well, gay men and interior design, isn't that a sort of cliche? So he may be representing his sexual identity as a virtue of his office in that particular way. To the top, we have Chief Justice Spiegelman, who was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of New South Wales. And next to him is a picture of the judicial swearing-in ceremonies, because I've done a study of swearing-in texts that are produced for these particular ceremonies and reading them through a heteronormative perspective to try to explore whether or not sexuality is represented in these statements. These statements are hagiographic texts, life writing, where the life of the new incumbent judge is written according to the values and virtues of the institution. And as I've been told, sexuality has nothing to do with this institution. In each and every of these swearing-in texts, there is a reference to sexuality, predominantly heterosexuality. And it's interesting to see how lesbians and gay men write themselves into these texts, into these scripts, in order to talk about the sexual difference as a virtue of the institution. And I think my favourite one is of a gay man who has a passion for fast motorbikes. And I think it's the chair of the Bar Association talks about this passion for motorbikes as being emblematic of the judge's capacity to manage a very fast and unruly situation, which is the courtroom. So that's the background to me getting to this particular ceremony. The top two pictures show the judges leaving the UK Supreme Court the day the Supreme Court opened for the first time, the 1st of October 2009. There are many members of the media present taking photographs. The picture at the bottom is from the opening of the judicial year 2011. Almost no members of the media were there. One lonely street sweeper from Westminster City Council was watching the judges parade. So it was very much a media event, very few people, members of the public watching. But the judges processed to the front of Westminster Abbey. This is a second location that I analyse in my paper. This is an assemblage of judges coming together, preparing to go into the service. More colourful, more static. I contrast the procession of the judges moving from the Supreme Court to the Abbey in contrast to this tableau vivant, which is much more static. And in a sense, it's a product of the effect of my producing the image. So this is the judges on the crossing. They're dressed in black brocaded robes. The style of the robes draws upon a 16th century pattern of robe worn by high officials in the king's court. The gilded embroidery draws upon a pattern called froggings. And froggings were a particular Polish embellishment that became very fashionable in the 16th century and were utilized on the clothing of elites, often for clasping purposes, but they now become purely symbolic. But gilded embroidery showing the value of the institution. At the top of the arm, you have a series of embroidered images that represent the values of the court and the particular jurisdictions that come together in the court. So these are representations of judicial authority. All the judges look the same. The bodies become more of a mannequin rather than an individual personality. Again, that's part of the aesthetic. About the nature of the institution. So the movement of the judges from the Supreme Court to the Abbey is a spectacle of the symbols of judicial authority passing through the centre of London at a particular moment in time. The tableau vivant is, for me, more of a group portrait, more of a genre painting. This is how I'm sort of trying to make sense of it. It's about a series of bodies in juxtaposition with other bodies and, you know, in a sense, watching the spectacle of those bodies demands that I tell a story about the nature of these bodies, about the spectacle of the symbols that they display in front of the Abbey. I've included a portrait. It's a portrait of Michael Kirby. This is at the bottom left-hand corner. I've included it because the artist that I interviewed, Ralph Hymans, talks about drawing upon the Rembrandtian tradition of group portraits, so using multiple bodies to tell a story about the subjects in the image. And in particular here, it's not a group portrait, it's a portrait of an individual judicial subject, Michael Kirby, who is the only figure staring out at us full-faced. There's an interesting story behind why many of the other figures are not shown with their face towards us, and it's because the judges refuse to be represented in an image with Michael Kirby. He's a highly controversial judge in Australia, an outspoken gay man, and he's seen in many respects to be challenging and threatening judicial authority. But interesting juxtapositions with the other images that I produced of this tableau vivant. Drawing upon post-dramatic theatre, I've utilised that scholarship to try to make sense of the different spectacles. And in particular, drawing a distinction between judicial authority as it's performed in an institution and a location dedicated to the spectacle of judicial authority, i.e. the courtroom, which has barriers, which is all designed to stage the spectacle of judicial authority, to produce majesty or reverence for the spectacle, orientating the eye, elaborating the characteristics of that authority into the fabric of the institution, and that is in the courtroom, it's in the design of the building, this is talked about in terms of the centripetal characteristics of the institution, focusing everything together to enhance and generate the meaning of judicial authority, in contrast to the location of Westminster Abbey. which has many centrifugal tendencies. There's a multiplicity of functions going on. This is not a space that's dedicated to ceremony. It's not a space that's dedicated to judicial ceremony on the spectacle of judicial authority. And in my images, I capture some of that. So wonderful juxtapositions, ironic commentaries, Zombieland commenting on the rather peculiar, bizarre characteristics of the full bottom horsehair wig and the gilded robes. I think it's also interesting that it comments not only on the judicial spectacle, but on the spectacle of those that are supporting the judges, the assistants, who have this rather peculiar dress style of black and white in endless patterns. Another favourite is "Live a Lunch of Crime." This is an advertising slogan that makes reference to Burger King and an unmissable bargain that you can have. So drawing on the work of Guy Debord, thinking about the nature of contemporary spectacle, thinking about the juxtaposition of a rather archaic medieval spectacle of authority in relation to the spectacle of consumption and capitalism, and what happens to that spectacle of judicial authority in that sort of context. Are we seeing here a decay of a particular spectacle of authority? And I suppose this brings me back to the pedestrian crossing. Why were the judges going across the pedestrian crossing? If this is a procession, processions tend to have an impact on the wider location. It would have been easy for the judges to process down the road from the UK Supreme Court to Westminster Abbey. Maybe this is a way of minimising disruption on the traffic, on the flow of central London. Is that indicative of the decline of judicial authority, the decay of the significance of these symbols and ceremonies? Is that representative of a decay in the significance of the judicial authority? Well, my argument is that the judges are becoming increasingly important in the body politic because of the nature of the decisions that they're having to take around human rights, around the legality of governmental decisions, over the power to decide questions of life and death. I did an interview with Lord Phillips, who is the president of the Supreme Court, at the front of the image there. And he talked to me about how he understands the judge. And he understands the judge as an ordinary person who has particular intellectual qualities. And I think that fits quite neatly with a reading of the pedestrian crossing, because I want to incorporate the pedestrian crossing as part of the symbolic language of the procession, the symbolics of the virtues of the institution. So going across the pedestrian crossing, minimising the disruption in the city, could be read as a characteristic of this idea that he has of the judge as an ordinary person with extraordinary talents. And in the bottom right-hand corner, you have the picture of Lord Phillips that appeared when he was Lord Chief Justice on the court website. This was his official image. He's dressed in a Hawaiian shirt, holding a young child, which is his grandson, and the grandson is wearing a matching shirt. And when I asked him why he had this particular image, which was highly controversial, no wig, no red robes, no gold, he said, well, this was his way of showing people that he was an ordinary man doing this particular job. Last but not least, are these two images that come from the tableau vivant. Judge on a mobile phone, judge having his photograph taken. And it reminded me, as I was thinking through this by reference to Irving Goffman, and his theatrical metaphors of onstage, offstage, backstage, that the tableau vivant that I was examining was, for the judges, offstage or backstage. The stage was inside Westminster Abbey, where the spectacle of them seeking divine guidance for the year ahead when it came to the judicial practice was the theatre that they were about to enter. Whilst I was a spectator, in a weird way, I was a spectator backstage. And it's a little bit like that moment in The Wizard of Oz, where you see the wizard on the side with his megaphone doing a deep voice. And this shows the sort of materiality of the spectacle of judicial authority, which is about to be performed as a form of magic, as a connection to the divine power. And last but not least, three other pictures of judicial authority The one on the left-hand side comes from an advertising campaign, which is about a cream that women use to reduce the stretch marks after birth. I really don't know why they dress somebody as a judge, but there you go. The top right-hand image is an image of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, produced by a photographer, Philip Landreville, who's produced many of the official images of the court. He produced this particular image for a book that the Chief Justice had written, and he talks about it in terms of his particular aesthetics. He's taken many photographs of leading politicians in Canada, and he talks about how he tries to get them to look into the camera, to be more aggressive, to be more sort of as a way of engaging the viewer. And I think this is an interesting one in terms of the judge. He talked about how judges had a very specific idea about aesthetics of the image, and it was certainly nothing to do with this one. And the one in the middle is an immigration judge who appeared in a charity calendar raising money for a hunting and fishing organization, and I think that led to his resignation. Thank you very much.